Welcome to Manager Tools. Pandemic guidance continued. This cast answers these questions. What should I be doing in light of the pandemic? What can I prepare for the coming recession? Well, if you want answers to these important questions and more, keep listening.
Folks, it sounds sort of selfish coming from me, but we like to think that the best review of any product is the one that comes from somebody who's used it. My new book is out, The Effective Hiring Manager, and it's out on audiobook now. And in this particular case, I narrated it myself, which wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. And one of our reviewers has shared with us the definitive guide to interviewing. People tell me often hiring is from the gut, not if you read this book. I have followed the guidelines from this book, and it has dramatically improved my hiring effectiveness. So glad I purchased it. You can read more and longer reviews on Amazon and then buy the book. We'd encourage you to do that, particularly if you're hiring. And once the recession goes away, a lot of us will be hiring again. Another reviewer pointed out, many will say, I rarely get to hire somebody, so why should I hire this book? And of course, that's a great reason to buy it, because exactly the reason that you do it so frequently, you're never going to get good at it. And yet hiring is probably the most important long-term strategic value managers add to their organizations. So, The Effective Hiring Manager, available now in audiobook.
All right, Mark, we're going to continue our guidance around managing in the time of COVID-19, which, to put it mildly, can be challenging.
Yeah, and I think what we have going on right now for professionals in general, and specifically for managers, is a focus on the virus and then a focus on governmental responses. And unfortunately, as a manager, if you think a little bit about it, you have to assume there's going to be some economic impacts. All you have to do, at least at the beginning, is to look at the stock market, which is, of course, valuations about the future. We talked last week about video one-on-ones and how important relationships were and how distance made a difference. But now we've got to go even bigger and broader and really step slightly out of our lane, in the sense that Manager Tools is not one to talk about the economy a great deal other than to respond to it. But we feel pretty strongly that we can't avoid a recession. And so that's part of what this cast is about. So
I'd be very happy if we were wrong.
Gosh, but you know, there's nothing wrong with preparing for difficult times. And then when they don't happen, you're well prepared to take advantage. It's always good to have capital at the bottom of the market. And capital, when it comes to individuals, is cash. So number one in our outline, prepare for a serious recession. Number two, as a manager, you've got to slash unproductive work. Number three, you got to take care of yourself. There's some things you need to find time to do. And number four, steel cage deathmatch preparations. We mentioned it last week. I wanted to talk about it a little bit more this week. And then we've been getting all kinds of ideas and having a robust conversation with people over the last week or so about managing people at a distance. And we have some additional recommendations about how to do that.
Okay, Mark, so let's talk about the elephant in the room, a serious recession. If you're a professional manager, regardless of what your executives have told you, you got to be thinking about this.
Yeah, I mean, and I think most of us aren't. With the conversations I've been having with people, it's clear there are managers who know it, and these are managers with a lot of experience, and a lot of managers who don't. So our guidance is simple. Basically, managers are supposed to look up from our day-to-day, the life we lead in the tasks. And so many of us get so much satisfaction out of accomplishing daily tasks that we forget that only individual contributors should be thinking about day-to-day. Only your individual contributors should be thinking about their tasks that are due today. While our executives are supposed to be thinking a year out, and maybe senior executives 2 to 5 years out, we managers should have a sense of the next 2 to 3 to maybe even 5 months, depending upon your role. The higher you go, the further out you're supposed to look. And so we took a look 5 months into the future and said, this is not good. You know, there's a great scene in Margin Call, the the movie several years ago. It's a Romana Clef about an investment bank facing a serious business disruption. There's a particularly famous scene. The CEO helicopters into the Manhattan offices and he learns what's happening. And he tells the group that his role could be described as he's supposed to read the market as music playing. And he says, well, the quote is, well, let me tell you something. Do you want to know why I'm sitting here in this chair with you all, why I get the big bucks, so to speak? I'm here for one reason and one reason only. I'm here to guess what the music is going to do a week, month, a year from now. That's it. Nothing more. And I'm afraid, standing here tonight, that I don't hear a thing. Just silence. He's realized that whatever plans they had have completely been blown out of the window. And I think that's an apt analogy for what's going to happen to the economy in the next year. We at Manager Tools believe, folks, that the focus on the coronavirus, which is legitimate, and then governmental responses to it, such as shelter in place and lockdown and all the words that people have been using over the last few weeks. And then, of course, the health of our own health and then the health of our families and our extended families have made it easy for so many of us as individuals and as managers to miss what is coming 2, 3, 5 months into the future. Once this crisis and our present focus is lifted, and that is a significant and deep economic recession, which will cost millions and millions and millions of jobs. I wouldn't be surprised if there's estimates out there already that it's going to be 10 million jobs alone in the U.S. If you're wondering what that's like, if you have some experience, if you're not 20 years old, and so therefore you might remember the financial crisis of 2008, that's bigger. That number is bigger than the losses, job losses in 2008. Now, it may be 2 or 3 million, but everybody I'm talking to at more senior levels think it'll be much bigger than that. I'll be shocked. I'll be thrilled. We'll be thrilled if it doesn't happen, but we'll also be shocked. I happen to live in California, and I drove through Monterey and Pacific Grove near my house last week. And admittedly, this was after a local shelter-in-place law went into effect. And I saw almost no one. I was just running an errand. And what that means, it's eerily quiet, and that's the pictures you see in the newspapers and on TV and so on. What that means is no economic activity. All those businesses that serve customers face-to-face will struggle to pay their mortgages on the building they're renting because they don't have any income. If a landlord, let's take it to the next level. If a landlord has just stretched herself in terms of the economy's been booming, I'm going to take a risk, I'm going to take on some debt, and I'm going to try another venture, she now needs that rent income to service new debt. And if she doesn't get the rent income because there wasn't economic activity, she could lose both the existing buildings and the new venture. Both. And the rents on that building from the new landlord probably go up. And by the way, that was before California, I mean, things are changing so fast, right? That was before California enacted a statewide shelter-in-place law, which means every place in California is like that. And it's interesting, in the news, it was a bit of a kerfuffle because New York City's mayor threatened to do that very thing. And then New York's governor said, well, actually, mayor, you don't have the power to do that. And by the way, let's not panic people. And then a day later, that same governor enacted a statewide closure of non-essential businesses. If you're wondering why I'm talking about these two examples, because California, as a standalone economy, ranks as the fifth largest economy in the world. New York ranks third in the United States. Texas is second, which should rankle them. And New York ranks 11 in the world. And it's above South Korea. even Pennsylvania and Illinois rank above Saudi Arabia in economic productivity. So even though certainly the younger you are, the more you think of economic activity occurring online, and we're thrilled that that is going well. And to be honest, I think we said it last week, the ability we all have to telecommute didn't exist 15 years ago. There weren't enough laptops. There may not still be enough laptops. There certainly wasn't the kind of video conferencing and so on. And there certainly weren't the kind of, certainly weren't smartphones. So the world's in a much better place to be able to handle this. But regardless of the online economy, you can't simply shut down a huge part of the rest of the economy and not expect massive repercussions. Now, look, some of you are going to say, well, you know, it's an easy prediction, guys, because layoffs have already started. And you're right. But for the most part, they're in individual contributor roles, certainly in the hotel and restaurant business. But here's my experience. Mike and I were talking about this. Here's my experience relative to layoffs. There are plenty of us, listeners, you guys out there, who haven't had one in your firm yet. You're aware that things are going to be tough, but you haven't had a layoff yet. It's been our experience in working with managers for nearly 30 years that if your firm isn't laying anyone off, people in that firm are a lot less likely to be sensitive to other firms' layoff activities, unless they're a vendor or a customer. And you might think, well, I'm okay for now. But look, it may be happening already. Executives at the top of your firm can't talk openly about what that revenue projection they've just changed means in terms of layoffs until they come up with some sort of plan. They're not going to mention that internally. And so if you're a first or second or even a third level manager, the talks could be happening right now, even though it hasn't been announced, and you wouldn't know it. And I was talking to a longtime licensee the other day about this, and he said, Mark, you need to tell people that if you're a manager listening now, even being a good performer may not save you from the wave that is coming. He agreed that it would be much worse than 2008. So if we scared you a little bit, then that's good, and we apologize for it, but don't shoot the messenger. And those of you who have been listening to us for a long time know we try really hard to be absolutely brutally honest if we can be, if we think it will help you, and later you can scream at us, and we'll console ourselves with being right. Look, at this point, as a manager, you should be taking no actions for which you don't consider the question, how might this be affected by a layoff? What is this project, plan, effort going to do if there's a layoff? And keep track of those things, even if it's just a little notebook you carry around with you, or a page in the back of your existing notebook. So projects, plans, team size, your personal situation, which we'll talk about shortly, ask yourself, how might this be affected by a layoff? There's nothing wrong with saying I'm doing the right thing based on the situation we have right now. That's good. And you also have to prepare for what will be the environment, the landscape, this project, task, decision, activity, effort. How will that be affected 5 months from now? We recommend you consider, now to be fair, what we're about to recommend may be prescribed by your leadership, telling your directs that the virus and the governmental responses are now what's important, but the wave of economics is already building. Now, look, you may have to caveat what you say with a disclaimer that your comments do not reflect knowledge you have about internal discussions about layoffs or anything else. But we doubt that your firm can stop you from sharing with your team what you are doing personally to prepare for a serious economic contraction. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, I'm not worried about my role, but I'm smart about the impact on the economy, and I'm making moves at home to be secure financially for the next year. And since we're talking about recessions and layoffs, remember, if you're involved in those conversations internally in your company, they're confidential. We would expect, if you've never done this before, that the executives who are leading the discussion will tell you, hey, this is confidential information, share it on pain of death, and so on. But they may not. They may assume that everybody's been in the room before, and everybody knows. Surely you know. I mean, although it's a good general rule to remember that sometimes the things that go without saying need to be said sometimes. But they may make a reasonable assumption that you would know. Surely you wouldn't talk about this outside this room.
Yeah, that puts people in a difficult position sometimes. Managers who get asked by their directs what's going on, what do they do then?
Oh, yeah, we've had previous guidance about this. We get asked this question all the time. It's easy. If one of your directs asks you in any way, shape, or form, you say, even if I did know it, I wouldn't share it. Full stop.
And then they persist?
Yeah, you just repeat yourself. You say the exact same thing again. And, this is funny. I had a conversation with somebody recently, and they asked me a question that, I have a saying that you're entitled to an honest answer to any question you ask me, as long as you're entitled to an answer. Meaning, there are some things you don't get to ask me about. There's parts of, maybe my married life or, something like that, but you have no obligation, to share or to feel inveigled or whined at, it really helped me. And I thought we were friends kind of thing. You have no obligation to share anything. So what happened was this person asked me the question a different way the second time. And I said the answer a second time. He says, I know, I heard you that first time. And I said, you're missing the point. Culturally, in the world, when you ask the same question a different way, and the person answers with the exact same words the second time. And by the way, guys, you don't have to be rude when you use the tone. You use the same tone. That's a clue. The person is asking something that you're not going to share. And usually it's because they don't have the right to know. And rights and privileges and responsibilities are based on roles, and they're asking something they shouldn't be asking. So repeat yourself. Say the exact same words a second time. Even if I did know it, I wouldn't share it. Full stop. If they continue, say, continuing to ask me is embarrassing both of us. And guys, you might think, ooh, that's going to pinch them a little bit. You're right. It probably is. They might get their feelings hurt a little bit. And I always say in situations like that, that really are covered by etiquette and professionalism, my answer to, well, they might get their feelings hurt is, they started it. It's inappropriate of them to ask. It puts you in a situation where you have to decide to between the commitments and the integrity that you shared with one group and the relationship you have with another. And if they were a true friend, they wouldn't put you in that position. If they truly respected and admired and liked you, they wouldn't put you in that situation.
If you feel pressure when they're asking the question over and over again, and then you start interpreting, implying certain things, hinting, hedging, guys, don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, this is a reminder of our previous guidance that's important. A manager can't be friends with her directs. You just can't do it, guys. And if you don't know, there's a podcast called Can I Be Friends With My Directs? And I think the first word of the podcast is no. And there are people who disagree with us. And isn't it great? Freedom and diversity are great things. Okay. So it's coming. What does that mean for you as a manager? Number one, you've got to get rid of the unproductive work your team is doing. And everybody's got unproductive work. Extra work, some of it waste, creeps into all of our professional lives every day, right? You can't stop it. Unproductive work is a cost because it doesn't produce profitability, but we have to pay for it. So it's a cost without a benefit. That's not profitable. What does Peter Drucker tell us about costs? You do not control costs. You cut costs.
How do you do it?
I say costs, and then immediately I'm thinking, okay, you're asking me, how do I cut costs? Well, that's easy. You just cut them. So how do we get rid of unproductive? Yeah, I say that as a joke because, we should tell them. Folks, we have a podcast called Race Don't Chase. We've been getting probably more email about that podcast than in terms of the time right now, March 2020, than I ever have about a particular cast.
Oh, it's a must listen. Yeah. If you're a licensee, then go get the show notes and read it in like 10 minutes. But dudes, you got you got to listen to that cast.
And Manager Tools just went through a Race Don't Chase exercise here in our company in the middle of March 2020 to cut costs faster than our revenue will be affected, so we can be close to profitable even during the downturn. That's called Race Don't Chase. So how do you do this? How do you slash unproductive work? First, ask each of your directs to do some thinking about all the things they're working on. And look, if you've done this recently for some reason, you can use their previous work and ask them maybe just to modify it, okay? Ask them to work up a list of their regular work, special projects, efforts that they may not be working on right now, waiting on others' inputs for action, and so on, okay? And you're essentially wanting to know how they spend their time. Now, a key caveat to this. If you manage individual contributors, and many of you do, they're going to react with some fear to this, particularly in light of if they look up from the day-to-day and think 3 months from now, wow, there's a recession companies. Because they're knowing this, they know this is what managers do before a layoff. And they're right. And all you can do is tell them, I'm doing this for us to be productive, nothing more. I'm not keeping track of what you're doing. I have no plans to share this with anybody. I don't want anybody here working on anything we might look back on and not see any value in. While at the same time, while we're working on this unproductive stuff, regretting that more important stuff wasn't getting done. Now, that's for individual contributors, so they're going to be fearful. But if you supervise managers after you've asked this, you can probably tell them, do a review of all your stuff and cut out the stuff that's waste, okay? They can make their own calls. They can tell their people what to stop working on in favor of putting time into things that deliver value, perhaps even immediate value. Now, I'm not saying they wouldn't give you their list, but you're going to say, okay, do the analysis, send me your list, and you make a decision, okay? On the other hand, if you supervise individual contributors, after you ask them to bring you a list of recommended cuts, based on their estimation of value, you're the one that makes the cuts. Now look, this isn't because we don't trust folks. Look, we clearly trust them. We're accepting their list. But it's for their own protection. If you make the call and someone goes down to one of your directs and says, where's my stuff? You used to do X. You're not doing anymore. They can refer that person to you. Their question comes to you. And now there's a completely different role scenario going on here. If you let an individual contributor at the lowest level of the company decide what they're not going to do, and they get in trouble with people who outrank you or are your peers, you have a very different conversation about defending that work or the stopping of work than if it is seen that you directed the work to be stopped. And then you get a chance to make a case for why, in these trying times, that work should have been stopped. Now, look, don't worry about being told to pick some things back up. Don't worry about it. There's no way you can be perfect about work. Bosses are always asking you about stuff that, at least in my experience, were always asking me about stuff that I thought was no longer important and suddenly had become resurrected, okay? And other times, you brief your boss on something that you think is super important. Your boss is like, why are you even working on that? Didn't I tell you that's not important? It's far better to err on the side of value and productivity than lose productivity on work that won't make a difference in the near term. Now look, there's another piece to this, sort of the second layer learning that happens. Once you get an understanding of what everyone is recommending that they're going to pause or stop doing, you can synthesize it all and perhaps make some cross recommendations depending upon how your team or your managers and their teams are organized. One team that works for you might cut Project X, or one individual says, I'm going to stop working on that. another person who works for you doesn't cut Project X. They have a different estimation of how important Project X is.
But both work's required, right?
Yeah, exactly. If one of them does it and the other one doesn't, the first guy's work that was done is worthless, right? So you may have to tell one, no, that stays, or tell the other guy, sorry, you have to set that aside. Because, again, other people aren't going to be doing the related work that you need. Your work by itself is of no value. It requires other people's work. This is the beauty of the separation of labor, the specialization of labor, and the value of magnification that comes from organizations.
Yeah, and requires communication. And hence the value of management.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good. So you've got to go through that exercise in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you also got take care of yourself. Folks, you're not immune to the impacts of the layoff. You could get laid off.
Yeah, the movie version where you take care of your people and work yourself to the bone and don't take care of your family, and then you save their jobs and you lose yours. The hero, that's not a movie that needs to play. There's something to be said for taking care of your team, but that doesn't have to come at the expense of your family. Look, you may get laid off in the next coming 6-9 months. Get your resume in order. If you need to do more than just listen to our free podcast guidance, called Your Resume Stinks, by the way, because most resumes we see are horrible here. And let's say, you know, in your personal frugality cutting, which we'll talk about in a different cast, and you can't afford our resume workbook right now, send us an email and we'll loan it to you. Okay. You can pay us back whenever your personal cash flows improve. Okay. We don't want to make money off of you when you're staring some difficult times in the face. And again, we trust you. And hopefully we've earned the right to ask you, if we're going to help you with all these free podcasts and so on, that if you do pay us for work, licensee, show notes, a digital product or whatever, that you don't share that product with other people.
We're involved in our own race. Don't chase here at Manager Tools.
For sure. I just mentioned that. Yeah. We're a for-profit corporation as well. Okay, so you got to get your resume together. And there's a right way to do that, okay? The next thing you got to do is warm up your network. And I'm doing this cause a great disservice because there are probably 30 or 40 podcasts, maybe even 50 or more, about changing jobs, about the documents you need, about how to prepare for interviewing and so on. But for now, this week, you've got to start a project that within a week, your resume will be good to go. And the next thing you need to do is start reaching out to your network now. Say hello to them. Ask about their family. Ask about their work, about their health, about their employment situation. Offer to help them if you can. Okay? This is not ninja job searching in the future, because you're just going to tell them some nice platitudes and then they'll be warmed up when you need them. No, reach out to people that you care about. You high D's and C's, fake it. And you need to do this now so that if you have to look for a job during a downtime, you're not asking for help out of the clear blue sky. If you haven't spoken to someone in a year, and then suddenly send them your resume, you're going to get a lot worse reception than if you've just asked after them, you've offered to help, you've touched base, and now is a good time. Right? Now, in times of crisis, people expect to feel connected to other people. They want more connection with other people, because human beings know during a crisis, more people, having connection to more people, improves your chances of survival and success. Hey, one other thing that's probably unlikely, but still, if you're a manager tools manager and you have opportunities to hire, why not try to look for others in our community? I just got a message, a text message from somebody at Apple who says they're hiring not generally at Apple, but this particular person is hiring. And one of the beauties of being at Apple is the size of their balance sheet makes people feel like, if I've just lost my job where I'm working way sooner than I thought, I might want to go to a company that's more financially secure than the one I was at. Next, you've got to pay attention to our personal frugality cast that's coming out in the next couple of days. There are things in your life that cost you money that you can cut today. And I'm just going to give you a list that I rattled off at the top of my head, but I'm also going to say that we'll have a cast with more specific guidance about how to do this again in a couple of days. And you might want to turn yourself on to a concept called FIRE, which is financial independence, retire early. It might seem a little much to you, but the FIRE movement basically believes in cutting expenses enormously and essentially being so frugal for the first 20 years of your adult life that you can retire when you're 45, which you can. The problem with retirement is not how much you make. It's always how much you spend. And a podcast I can recommend is one by a client of ours and a M-Conference speaker this year in August, Maggie Tucker, called Friends on Fire. I recommend, if you're a podcast person and you're interested in tightening the financial belt, Friends on Fire is a good way to go. But look, you could probably get by without Sirius XM radio in your car. My 65 Mustang has an old cheap Delco radio in it. I think it's a Delco. Maybe not. Maybe Delco was only GM.
Delco would be an improvement on what you got.
Yeah. And I have a steel antenna that means I can't take my car through a car wash. Look, let me tell you something else. No more bottled water. Okay. Water is more expensive than gasoline, and water comes out of your tap. Now, the world changes enormously if suddenly municipal water systems can't guarantee clean water. Frankly, you don't need to buy that many liquids of any kind for most of us. Just drink water all the time. If you got kids, okay. They might need milk or juice. Although kids got by fine without juice. I know, I did. It's certainly a lot cheaper out of the tap. Learn to drink your coffee black. No more lattes. Pack your lunch. It's interesting, by the way. I wonder if anybody noticed I didn't ask you to take away coffee. That's a personal preference of mine, by the way.
That falls into the essential food groups.
Coffee's not expensive. As long as you're buying, you know, not Starbucks high-end coffee at the grocery store. No more Starbucks trips. I mean, if you buy a latte, I every once in a while I see a TV show that's set in modern times, and every time they're trying to show the personal lives of people at work that are shown at work in the show, they show them going to work and stopping at their own personal coffee shop with their own personal barista, getting a double whipped whatever. You know, but that's $4. $4 times 20 is $80 a month. There you go. That's what, $1,000 a year? I mean, would you want to look back and say, yeah, but I had my daily Starbucks. Pack your lunch when you go to work. Food at the grocery store, at least in the U.S., is fairly cheap. I know some foods have been scarce, but those shortages are going to pass through the system. Couldn't you get by without a gym membership? I've read 1,000 times about changing up your workout to get new gains, right? Don't cut your workout out. Gosh, you need that during this time to stay healthy. Mens sana in corpore sana, a healthy mind and a healthy body. But just stop spending money to do your workout. Stop buying clothes for now. Go through your app subscriptions. I do know that on my iPhone, there's a thing that you can go to get subscriptions. And it shows you all your subscriptions. And I found like 5. I'm like, why am I subscribed to that? And Apple makes it easy. You just say cancel the subscription. And of course, because you're buying it through the Apple store, they'll cancel it. And suddenly you're saving $1, $2, $3, $5 a month. Cut to the bone. No new music for a while. You know, believe me, the people who sell you music, they'll be fine. Cut your television subscriptions. There are now subscriptions for apps on TV. Except maybe Disney Plus, if you have young kids And don't consider that to be a promotion for Disney. Disney's not a client. And again, more details about that in our Frugality Cast coming up. And guys, I'm not an expert. I'm really not. In fact, I'm not good at this. But I love the fact that I have to talk about it because it reminds me. And my wife and I are doing the same thing here. In addition to Race Don't Chase for the company, my family is doing Race Don't Chase to make sure we're being careful and we'll be okay for the next year. Okay, so what about next?
Okay, so next, this cast just seems like it's got lots of bad stuff in it.
I know, that's exactly what I was feeling. But look, you can look away.
It's still going to happen.
Yeah, it's still going to happen.
You might as well see it coming and be prepared.
What Mike's talking about is Dan McGuire's famous phrase, steel cage death match. We need to talk about preparation. And we're only going to touch on this briefly for just a couple of minutes because we have an entire podcast dedicated to it, and we're highly recommending you go listen to that podcast, okay? If you don't know what we mean, a steel cage death match meeting happens when either there are more than enough qualified candidates for a promotion or layoff decisions are being made in your firm. We just re-released this cast in the last 10 days as part of our coronavirus COVID pandemic guidance. So it should be easy for you to find if you have a chronological list of the podcast. But look, key points. Preparation is key for those meetings. You have to be prepared. If you go in unprepared, someone else will already have pre-wired their candidate to all of the people. And by the way, if you don't know what pre-wire is, there's a podcast for that too. You have to have results that your directs delivered at the ready. You have to think about them and their relationships to determine who you're going to try to persuade about who stays and who goes on your team. And ideally, you'll have prepared baseball cards made up on everybody who works for you, who's going to be discussed in the steel cage deathmatch meeting. If you don't know what a baseball card is, then we've mentioned it many, many times over the years in the cast, but we don't want to reinvent the wheel here. So that's in the steel cage deathmatch meeting podcast.
Yeah. Go listen, folks.
During this pandemic, we've had a lot of our clients say, hey, wait, we had stuff scheduled in March and April and May, but we now have some exciting news for clients who have been thinking about management training, but maybe haven't pulled the trigger yet. And that's the inclusion of Roadmap, our rollout process, available on your free Manager Tools app for every attendee who goes to an effective manager conference with a client. It's simple. We'll give you an enterprise view of everybody, and it gives you data on how people are doing and rolling out the Trinity. So give us a call, and we'll tell you about it.
Okay, some further distance management recommendations, managing during this pandemic and managing directs who are distant from you.
So we've gotten a lot of notes, a lot of emails, a lot of texts, a lot of tweets, a lot of Instabooks and Facegrams from folks about thanking us for the guidance we re-released to make it current, but also our Manager Tools guidance of last week in detail. I think it was 2 days, 3 hours total, where we went exhaustively through one-on-ones. But we've also heard a lot of suggestions in the last week from our entire community all over the world, from the front lines. And we believe a lot of it is worth sharing. So we've sort of sifted through it and come up with some of our best recommendations based on stuff we agree with or stuff we know have heard of worked elsewhere. Now, this is one of those cases where we believe this is worth sharing, even if we haven't tested some of this ourselves or been able to measure it specifically. We really like the idea of leaving your video chat software open and live on your desktop so your remote folks at home can stop by at any time for an impromptu chat. I say stop by, but you understand what I mean, I think. We lose these impromptu chats completely when folks are distant from us. We probably all underestimate how much communication and even work tends to get done during these short ad hoc discussions. Some managers feel that it's so important to have ad hoc discussions, they believe that's how they manage, and they refuse to do one-on-ones because of it. So clearly, these impromptu ad hoc meetings, hallway meetings, chit-chats, and so on are important. Now, look, it doesn't take the place of one-on-ones, but they're useful for maintaining relationships, and that's good. Look, when you start a video meeting, be there early. Welcome folks when they come in. Chat with them the way you would walking into an actual meeting room. But please, you know, probably the young people don't know this, but the more experienced people know this. It used to be on teleconferences when people would come in, there would be a beep or a noise, and then somebody would say, Kathy's here, or Mike's here, or Matt's here, or whatever. Please tell folks not to introduce themselves the way they used to on teleconferences. It's video. We saw your window come up. We know it's you. But it's a habit. It's hard to break. I find myself doing it. I do it on our bridge, on our teleconference bridge. Now, at the same time, this is still a meeting, and we all have lots to do. And as we'll talk about, your direct may have one of their children pulling on their sleeve at that very moment. So don't let the chat run on. Start your meetings on time. Please don't say one of the most hated phrases in the history of manager tools. We'll just give everyone a few more minutes.
Oh, God.
Well, no. You're actually not giving everyone a few more minutes. There's a whole bunch of people. There's 80% of the people already in the room. You're not giving them any more minutes. In fact, you're wasting their minutes. I'm astounded by that. And then people wonder why their company can't meet deadlines.
Companies that, you know, they have products and they provide, you know, free video conferences on a particular topic, which I attend sometimes to learn about the particular topic or what the opportunities are for managed tools or whatever. And they say that every single time, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah, you're a potential customer, but we don't care about your time. We want your money, but we don't care about your time. Which, dude, I'll give you my money just so I can have more time. Yeah, so start on time. Don't let folks choose to dial in. There's a dial-in number with most video chat software. Now, sure, there are rare situations. Somebody's pulled over on the side of the road for an impromptu meeting or an emergency meeting or something like that. But a lot of the tendency of folks to choose that goes away if you insist on people getting on video. It is not an invasion of people's privacy to say, I want you on video for this meeting on the laptop that we bought for you that has video camera and video software installed by the company IT folks. Sorry. You got nowhere to hide.
Yeah, we can't do that, though, because, you know, during this time we're telecommuting, et cetera, kids are now stuck at home with their parents, and so kids interrupt.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're running around the background. It just totally destroys the meeting.
I got to tell you, I something got lost in the translation for me for I was reading these stories. People, I'm really stressing out. My kids are interrupting my work. I have to spend time with them. Folks, don't worry about your team's kids interrupting a conference call, a video call. You're not live on television being interviewed about international affairs. It's supposed to be in your locked office. That's actually a reference to an event that occurred where somebody's kids came into the room. Look, your folks have kids. Kids aren't always manageable. Jeez, what would life be like if kids were manageable? If your direct's kids make noise and they need to go check on them, let them go check on them. If the person who has to leave is involved directly in that part of the meeting, look, that's the beauty of having an agenda. Stop what you're doing and tell Robert, hey, Robert, go take care of your son. It's good, man. We're going to move on to the next item. And when you come back, we can pick it up where you left off. Okay? And wouldn't it be good to know your direct's kids' names, for heaven's sakes? I mean, you know, you're on video. And they're home. They're trying to do their best work because of shelter in place. And the kid comes in, and you, the first thing you say, who's that? Boy, talk about a divide between you and your direct. Okay, some other thoughts. We've heard a lot about virtual celebrations where everybody can see everybody else on video. We're actually not big fans of offices who sort of force birthday celebrations on folks. The idea that we're a celebratory culture, which really doesn't have that much to do with productivity, other than it's probably negative while everybody's partying. The idea that we're going to make you celebrate when, in fact, there are people who don't want birthdays. You know, and you're certainly not going to share a cake in this particular case unless it's been sanitized. But look, who could argue with everyone being on a call for a minute to sing happy birthday to one of your colleagues' kids? Okay.
Yeah, a lot of benefits to that.
I heard that idea. That was great. And it's gonna relax that hard barrier that your directs are probably trying to enforce with their kids around. And it's hard to keep the right barrier up. And so the barrier is going to be permeable. It's not an iron curtain. Roll with it, guys. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, we might as well acknowledge reality. People's kids are homes with them. Like,
yeah,
let them relax about it a little bit.
Yeah, I'll also say, I don't know, Rhonda and I have 7 kids, and so we've been around the block when it comes to kids. If my kids were home for 2 weeks, I know this is going to brand me a traitor, or somebody's going to send me a link to something that proves my kids aren't going to get into Harvard or Stanford or Yale or something. But I got to tell you something. My kids were home for 2 weeks. I wouldn't feel the need to keep them on a super tight schedule and say, you've got to do this homeschooling. I get it that there's kids using Google Classroom and they're staying up with their lessons. But if the public school my kids went to, and certainly private school too, didn't have their ducks in a very tight little row, and so there was some uncertainty about what was going to happen and so on, I'm not going to make my kid read War and Peace necessarily. I'm not going to necessarily say, you've got to do your lesson and I've got to check it. The world is a different place now, Mike, than when you and I were kids, but I will tell you that in some places in the world, certainly where I grew up, which was in the middle of the suburbs of Los Angeles, and I've heard this from many people our age, that the first thing our parents did when we came home after we did homework was go outside and play until dinner. And then on Saturday and Sunday, that's what you did. You went outside and played until dinner. And you may not be able to do that, but that's a lot different than enforcing on your kids 6 or 8 hours worth of learning, or even 5 or 6 hours worth of learning. If you're in a small apartment in Manhattan, there's probably a limit to how much enforcement of your kids you can do in that small a space. I will say, my wife Rhonda shared with me last night as we were having dinner that she heard, found a meme or a theme or an idea or a joke going around that a husband and wife working at home had decided to, quote, hire, unquote, a virtual assistant who is invisible, who doesn't exist. And they called her Claire. And the pay is good, right? They don't pay her anything. And she gets blamed for all of the things, like when the husband or wife get up and there's all kinds of empty water bottles all over the house because they've been drinking water as they've been working. And, you know, they get busy and they just leave stuff laying around. And now stuff is kind of messy. And so they blame Claire for it as a joke, as a reference to, no offense to those of you who are named Claire, just as a way to lighten the mood, because otherwise 2 people working in a small space in a different environment that you normally work in, might be cause for tension, conflict, maybe, drama.
Maybe.
Yeah. Now look, guys, we wouldn't feel the need to apologize to a client or a vendor of our firm at all if we were on a phone call, a video call with them, and our kids interrupted, even if it was an important phone call, okay? You just can't magically extend the intensity and privacy of an office workplace into people's homes. And quite frankly, my home outranks your office, my office. I'll tell you something else. We had some discussion, with a couple of managers about how they have people dial in, and some people recommended dialing in on cell phones and so on. But look, we at Manager Tools on our Zoom calls, that's the software we use, Zoom, we're not recommending it, although we think it's wonderful. We haven't done a point-by-point comparison of the other software you can use for video group meetings.
And you don't need to write in and tell us about the other ones. We're pretty happy.
Yeah. What we all use on the calls is a Jabra, J-A-B-R-A, wireless headset. I think we got them all from Amazon in the last couple of years. And it's plugged into our computer. And we recommend the one-eared one, particularly, so you can hear your kids out of the other ear. And I know I probably shouldn't say stuff like this, but nobody is probably going to be too worried about how perfect their hair is on a call while they're working from home. So get the one that has a band over the top. Everyone that I've talked to says it's way better than the one that fits over your ear. If you're on the phone the way we are for 5 or 6 hours a day, the one that fits over your ear, cups your ear, or hooks over your ear can be quite painful at the end of the day. And I've had mine on for 5 or 6 or more hours until the battery dies all day. And it's a convenient charging station and so on. And excellent sound as well.
That's good.
Okay, that's sort of a mundane point to end on, but let me summarize. Guys, a serious economic recession is coming. With everything else that you're doing, and we know you're doing a lot, you've got to enact Race, Don't Chase at work and at home. You've got to cut out work waste, those least productive tasks among your team. You got to start preparing for the steel cage deathmatch meetings. And you know, now as I'm sitting here saying, you got it, I feel like all I'm doing is piling more on you when you've got worries of your own. And for that, I apologize. Hopefully you can do some things to help your video comms be more effective among your team. We're thinking about you. We know times are hard. If we can help, send mail. We'll do our best.
Absolutely. Take care of yourself, folks. Take care of your team, and we'll get through this. We'll get through it.
Folks, we'll sign off during these difficult times with a shout out to a longtime licensee and regular correspondent of mine, Will Cuellar in San Antonio, Texas. Will has been a licensee for, I think, within months at the very beginning. He has been to an effective hiring manager conference. I've met him a couple of times. He is always kind and gracious to me, and his questions are interesting because sometimes you face things that our guidance just doesn't cover. He's really, really smart. He's a good friend of mine. Will, thanks for your years and years and years of loyal licensee service.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
You bet, partner. Keep calm and carry on.
So long.